This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you're having a wonderful Thanksgiving Day. Got Jess P.S. on the board here, and we are grateful.
Yes, we are.
We are so very grateful.
Mm-hmm.
I've been practicing.
You've been practicing. That's wonderful. I'm really glad to hear it.
I'm grateful to hear it. See, I even my teeth no longer clench when I say it.
Not quite so much,
no,
at least.
See,
progress.
You know,
baby steps.
It's not an exercise in perfection.
Right. It's
being
just
grateful
constant.
Is
exercise, yes. Getting stronger with each practice.
You know, I CrossFit.
Uh-huh, sure.
Okay, very rarely. It's just a lot of work. Hey, folks, thank you for tuning in. We did tell you that we are very grateful for you listening, but we're also very grateful for humanity. We want to celebrate humanity a little bit, right?
Yeah, man.
I'm always so down on the people sometimes.
Well, we spend a lot of time on this show looking at all the things that are kind of not going great. And we spend a lot of time focusing on the ways that humans tear each other down.
I like to think that maybe we're looking at that. Here's our failings,
mm-hmm.
And perhaps this is what we can do better.
Okay, so we're taking a little bit of time now to take that step back and look at the good work that humans are doing to help us be better, to achieve that promise of humanity.
Is there a promise of humanity? Do you think, is that a philosophical effort, do you think? Or do you think there's literally a, like, every culture, every being, everyone thinks that we can be something better, bigger and better? And
I think part of being human is a recognition that we can always improve. We can always change, that we are not fixed into whatever we are at that moment, that we can always change. We can always grow. I think that that's a quintessentially human thing. And I think that it's really beautiful and wonderful that there are organizations in this world that are dedicated to recognizing the work that we're doing to build together and to build forward. Now, back.
That's beautiful.
Oh, well, thank you.
Very motivating.
I try to be sometimes.
Sometimes I think people just suck and it bothers me. But yes, let's endeavor for something greater.
Let's try.
Yes, let's do that. In that effort, the Nobel Prize.
Hey.
Not Nobel. Nobel Prize. Yeah. And it's not just a Peace Prize.
It's not just a Peace Prize. There are five other categories of the prize, being physics, chemistry, physiology, otherwise called medicine, and literature, with a sixth additional prize in economics.
Ooh.
Yeah. Should we get Maggie on for that?
I was going to say, you know, I got that all figured out. Tariffs fix everything. Next question.
Uh-huh.
I want the prize in economics.
Well, you can't nominate yourself, Dom.
What?
That's part of the Nobel Prize. You cannot nominate yourself. You must be nominated by a designated nominator.
Ooh.
Yes.
Allow myself to introduce myself. So you have to a designated
nominator.
Nominator.
Yes.
Now, is there any requirement that the nominator themselves have won a Nobel Prize? Or is
no,
just,
but okay. Winning a Nobel Prize does automatically make you qualified to be a nominator.
Oh, man.
So all you have to do is first win the Nobel Prize in something else, and then you can nominate Maggie for
the economics. Oh, okay. Then I could totally do it.
Yeah. And
all
then,
right.
I don't know, maybe she can nominate you back. It can...
Yeah,
yeah, sure, that'll work.
One hand washes the other, they both wash the face. Forget about it.
Forget about it.
That's how we do it. All right, so we went to the NobelPrize.org.
Yes, we did.
There's lots of information.
There's a lot of good information here.
The Nobel Foundation, established in 1900. The prizes are awarded in Sweden and Norway, and ceremonies are on the 10th of December. Now, the prizes awarded in Sweden and Norway.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Why?
The prizes, the Nobel Prize, it's named after a man, Alfred Nobel, who invented dynamite. Fun fact.
Boom. I mean,
boom,
thank
baby.
You. If it were not for that, my cartoons would never have been as
never
interesting
be the
as
same.
It.
No, absolutely no, no. not. And it was actually a bit of guilt over having invented something that really turned into a way for humans to engage in the worst things that we can do.
Oppenheimer's like, hold my coffee.
Right. A couple decades later. That led Alfred Nobel to dedicate the vast majority of his fortune to this enterprise in his final will and testament, to establishing this foundation that would recognize those who, during the preceding year, shall have conferred the greatest benefit to humankind.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Very lofty.
Isn't it?
And how do you gauge that? That's got to be tough.
Right. So this is why it's a year-long process for choosing the people who will be eligible for the awards and then going through meticulously and choosing who will be given the Nobel Prizes in these seven categories.
Now I noticed that the economics category mm-hmm, was added mm-hmm. later.
Yes, it was.
By the Church of Central Bank of Sweden or something, I believe.
Yeah.
They were celebrating their 300th year.
Uh-huh.
And they gave
300 years. That's a long time.
I want to get in that safe. You know what I mean? You got any old lock boxes from like 250 years ago
Ooh,
that you ever someone lost the key? So the central bank gave a donation in honor of their 300th anniversary
mm-hmm.
to the Nobel Foundation, which then in turn created a economics Nobel Prize, right?
Correct. Gotcha. Correct.
Okay.
And I think that's part of a reflection of in 1900, the world economy was not quite so intertwined as it is now. And by the mid 1960s, it was also cross-exchanged that there was good work being done in economics that was benefiting not just these local communities, but the entirety of humankind.
Can I get the algorithm that makes me the most money ever? Oh, maybe that doesn't benefit mankind. It might just benefit
a man. Yeah.
Okay, but if I were to follow the Central Bank of Sweden's,
mm-hmm.
I could give money to the Nobel Foundation, maybe get a Nobel Prize in broadcasting.
We'd have to donate a lot.
I got checks.
You got checks? Like a bounce, man.
I mean, you know, just hang on to it. Post-dated, like 30 years. It's fine.
Yeah,
I got checks and I got credit.
Okay.
So, but the most recent one was the economics was
yes.
added in the 60s. But these other ones were original from 1900.
Right. They were written into the will. That's the founding document.
A will?
The will. Wow. The final will and testament of Alfred Nobel. Is the founding document for the Nobel Prize.
Interesting.
Yeah.
From the Nobel Prize, the Nobel Prize rewards science, humanism, and peace efforts. Peace, brothers. This is one of the central concepts in the will, as mentioned, of Alfred Nobel. Nobel. See, God. I read it and I say it.
You psych yourself out, man.
I know. And it also permeates the outreach activities that have been developed for the purpose of engaging, inspiring, and spreading knowledge about the prize, as well as the discoveries and achievements of the laureates.
The laureates.
Is that the Dr. Seuss little guy with the?
That's the Lorax.
Okay.
So laureate comes from laurels.
I get so confused.
Like as if to rest on your laurels.
Oh,
it comes from ancient Greece. Back in the days of the original Olympic Games, they were every other year, a series of games held in Olympia to honor the god Zeus. And
all hail Zeus.
The prizes for these games were not a monetary value. It wasn't gold bars. It wasn't horses aplenty. It was a laurel wreath. So the laurel tree, the branches and leaves turned into a wreath that a person would wear on their head as a sign of status and honor is where this all comes from. So Nobel laureates calls back on this heritage of not doing it for the money, shall we say, but doing it for the prestige and for the honor itself. While there is a cash prize for becoming a Nobel laureate, it's kind of expected that you're going to use that cash prize to further your work in humanitarian efforts, which isn't to say that they all do. Some of them...
Oh, come on, Vegas, baby!
Some of them do use their cash prizes as they see fit, and you know what? Good for them. But yes, Nobel laureate is how you refer to someone who has received a Nobel Prize.
And that's based on the tree and the branches and the leaves that people would put on their heads back in the day.
Correct.
Now, if you saw someone walk around with like branches and leaves in their head, on their head
right
now.
I mean, it's nicely braided and it's made into something that is nice to wear. It's not like they just got twigs sticking out of their hair.
You know, I've woke up in some weird places. All right, so
Males.
The cash prize, 11 million Swedish krona.
Yes.
Which equates to just over 1 million US dollars.
Yeah, it's a pretty penny.
That is. But, you know, you think about some of the efforts, and not just what we talked about briefly earlier, the, you know, not just the folks that are on the document, but mm-hmm. all the supporters behind them and everything. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, $1 million doesn't go as far as it used to.
No, it doesn't. And when it's spread between three recipients, a Nobel Prize can be awarded to one to three people. You know, you're already down to, I don't want to do math on the radio, but $300,000 each. Yeah. It's still a decent sum.
It'll definitely
pay the bar a tab, at least for a week. But it's not necessarily going to lead to the next huge discovery. It's a step.
It is a step. So we do have some of these folks. We're talking about the Nobel Prize in Physics, Nobel Prize in Chemistry, in Medicine, Literature, and the Peace Prize. You know, I'm a big fan of the Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, you say it so much.
I just always think when I think of a Nobel Prize.
That's
I
the
think
first of, one that comes to mind.
The Nobel Peace Prize. And we should, you know, let's take a look at that. And we know they have these other ones in physics, and I do like me some physics. We talked about the Large Hadron Collider before, right? I mean, I like physics and science and stuff. Literature, you know, I love Mad Magazine. Don't read as much as I used to. You know, I was forced to read as a child.
So you're traumatized.
Not traumatized, just tough to get through. I mean, I read a lot. I mean, I read all day.
You read a lot of articles.
I do read a lot.
Yeah.
And so occasionally I'll read some historical document to kind of support an article, but it's pretty rare. Mm-hmm. Folks, this is the Dom Salve Show. We're going to talk about the Nobel Peace Prize and perhaps some of the other ones as well. Got Jess P.S. on the board. Hope you got some turkey in your mouth and a beer in your hand. Come back with us. We'll tell you all about it.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Happy Thanksgiving to us all. Got Jess P.S. on the board. We are talking Nobel Prizes and specifically my favorite, the Nobel Peace Prize. Because that's one that just automatically comes out of my mouth every single time.
Well, it's good that you've got peace on the mind.
I do. I am all about the peace. Yeah. Love and peace. Peace and love, baby. Can't get enough of that. The Nobel Peace Prize, I got the announcement here. And I was kind of eager. I'm like, oh, man, this is some heavy stuff.
Yeah,
I was not prepared, but I think it's important, and I'm looking forward to sharing it with you. Jess is going to help me out as well. The Norwegian Nobel Committee has decided to award the Nobel Peace Prize for 2024 to the Japanese organization Nihon Hidankyo. Hidankyo, this grassroots movement of atomic bomb survivors from Hiroshima and Nagasaki, also known as Hibakusha, is receiving the Peace Prize for its efforts to achieve a world free of nuclear weapons and for demonstrating through witness testimony that nuclear weapons must never be used again. In response to the atomic bomb attacks of August 1945, a global movement arose whose members have worked tirelessly to raise awareness about the catastrophic humanitarian consequences of using nuclear weapons. Gradually, a powerful international norm developed stigmatizing the use of nuclear weapons as morally unacceptable. This norm has become known as the nuclear taboo. The testimony of the Hibakusha, the survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, is unique in this larger context. These historical witnesses have helped generate and consolidate widespread opposition to nuclear weapons around the world by drawing on personal stories, creating educational campaigns based on their own experience, and issuing urgent warnings against the spread and use of nuclear weapons. The Hibakusha help us to describe the indescribable, to think the unthinkable, and to somehow grasp the incomprehensible pain and suffering caused by nuclear weapons. The Norwegian Nobel Committee wishes, nevertheless, to acknowledge one encouraging fact. No nuclear weapon has been used in war in nearly 80 years. Mm-hmm. Fingers crossed. The extraordinary efforts of Nihon Hidankyo and other representatives of the Hibakusha have contributed greatly to the establishment of the nuclear taboo. It is therefore alarming that today this taboo against the use of nuclear weapons is under pressure. Yeesh. The nuclear powers are modernizing and upgrading their arsenals. New countries appear to be preparing to acquire nuclear weapons, and threats are now being made to use nuclear weapons in ongoing warfare. At this moment in human history, it is worth reminding ourselves what nuclear weapons are. The most destructive weapons the world has ever seen. Next year will mark 80 years since two American atomic bombs killed an estimated 120,000 inhabitants of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. A comparable number died of burn and radiation injuries in the months and years that followed. Today's nuclear weapons have far greater destructive power. They can kill millions and would impact the climate catastrophically. A nuclear war could destroy our civilizations. The fates of those who survived the infernos of Hiroshima and Nagasaki were long concealed and neglected. In 1956, local Hibakusha associations, along with victims of nuclear weapon tests in the Pacific, formed the Japan Confederation of A-Bomb and H-Bomb Sufferers Organizations. The name was shortened in Japanese to Nihon Hidankyo and would become the largest and most influential Hibakusha organization in Japan.
The core of Alfred Nobel's vision was the belief that committed individuals can make a difference. In awarding this year's Nobel Peace Prize to Nihon Hidankyo, the Norwegian Nobel Committee wishes to honor all survivors who, despite physical suffering and painful memories, have chosen to use their costly experience to cultivate hope and engagement for peace. Nihon Hidankyo has provided thousands of witness accounts, issued resolutions and public appeals, and sent annual delegations to the United Nations and a variety of peace conferences to remind the world of the pressing need for nuclear disarmament. One day, the Hibakusha will no longer be among us as witnesses to history. But with a strong culture of remembrance and continued commitment, new generations in Japan are carrying forward the experience and the message of the witnesses. They are inspiring and educating people around the world. In this way, they are helping to maintain the nuclear taboo, a precondition of a peaceful future for humanity. Now, this group got on my radar in August. There was an August 6th piece in the New York Times, an opinion piece, The Last Survivors Speak. Mm. It's time to listen. And it goes through the founding of this organization, as well as some of these witness testimonies, what these people saw and experienced. And the people who are counted as Hibakusha are those who lived through the attack, as well as those who were in utero when the attacks happened, those who were conceived in the months following, who bear the proof of these attacks in their very genetic makeup.
Wow.
And the devastating effects that these bombs have had for generations in Japan, So the work that these people are doing of bringing these very personal stories forward and saying, we bear the scars not only on our skin, but on every piece of who we are. It's powerful. And it's, we need to listen. We cannot allow our world to fall to nuclear war.
Amazing. And it's 80 years since this, right? We're going to celebrate acknowledge the 80th anniversary. And those folks are, you know, they're dying off. They're going away. You know, talk about the greatest generation, our World War II great, you know, parents and great grandparents and so forth. You know, a lot of folks don't remember. And if there's no remembering, if there's no acknowledgement of you know, World War of Nuclear Holocaust, if you're, you know, sitting on the other side of the world and you're worried about someone, you know, oh, it's just a battlefield, Duke. It's just not a big deal. You know, we're playing with fire. And so congratulations to Nihon Hidankayo. And that is your 2024 Nobel Peace Prize winners. Folks, a little heavy, but appreciate it. Work for peace. Peace and love, baby. You can never go wrong there. Thank you, Jess, for that, bringing that to light. Stick around, folks. We're going to revisit a fantastic interview we did with our buddy, Farmer Hans Brighton Mosier Jr., talking about migrant labor here in the state of Wisconsin, its impact on the economy, the dairy industry, manufacturing, building, construction, agriculture, meat processing, you name it. It's a great spot. Hans is going to be here coming up next. Stick around.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. This is Jess P.S., his producer. We're wishing you a very, very happy Thanksgiving. For the final two segments of today, we are revisiting our interview with Farmer Hans Brighton Mosier about the impacts of Trump's proposed mass deportations, picking up from the third segment of Tuesday's show. Hope you enjoy.
I might be easy, but I ain't cheap, Jess. Folks, I'm jazzed as hell to introduce to you right now Hans Brighton Mosier Jr. from Merrill, Wisconsin. He was recently featured in an article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We discussed it at length, and I guess it was last week. Hans got word that we were talking about him. His ears were ringing. And he's also a friend of the Civic Media Network, goes on some of the shows around here. So this is our first time meeting and talking. Hans, welcome to the Dom Salvia Show, man. Thanks for showing up, man.
Well, thank you very much for having me and allowing me to talk about this very important issue and also allay any concerns that some of my friends might have that I was a hardcore Trump voter.
Right. So
I want to get that out of the way right now.
Certainly.
Off.
All right. So let's address that right off the bat. The article written by Rick Barrett, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, from November 18th. Mass deportations would devastate dairy farmers and other businesses. And you were quoted extensively in this article talking about farming. They wanted to talk about manufacturing as well. And when we were discussing it, and Jess, you can check me if I'm wrong here. Mm-hmm. I think I was very angrily questioning because it wasn't you per se, Hans. It was the reporting of Rick Barrett and General Sutton, not only doing a fine job, a hard job, I wouldn't want that job, but they did not, when they did this article, talk to you, ask you what your your political persuasion was. And I thought that was very important, given the fact that we do have lots of rural Republican farmers that are employing undocumented migrant workers on a regular basis, but then also voting for Trump. And that kind of, you know, I was laying that situation out. And I said it a few times, Hans. I'm not saying he did. I didn't check the tape, but I'm pretty sure I gave myself enough room. So, Hans, thank you. Would you please say for our audience, then, sir, before we get into the employment of migrant workers and the effect of mass deportation on Wisconsin's dairy farms and on prices and on industry, the economy in general, would you mind sharing with our audience how you voted this last election cycle?
Well, I did vote for Kamala Harris.
All right. A good man. All right. Woo.
Now, huge weight just lifted off of Dom.
I'm so glad I gave myself wiggle room on that. So, Hans, are you unique amongst your neighbors in Merrill in Upper Wisconsin?
Yeah, for sure. So you're absolutely forgiven, and I don't mean to give you a hard time.
That's really, all right, man.
Give him a hard time.
I saw this as an opportunity for me to use this little bitty platform that I have here as a result of that article to try and set the record straight, not about my voting patterns and history, but rather about the fact that there's a lot of good people in the great state of Wisconsin, all over this country, who have been demonized and otherized and just absolutely dragged through the mud and accused by our politicians, Donald Trump, Tom Tiffany in my area, of being these horrible, god-awful criminals. And I just know better. I know, I've worked alongside so many people, foreign-born people, my parents among them. I mean, my parents were immigrants a generation ago from Switzerland. But the point of it is, you know, I work with these folks and super hardworking people doing work that otherwise wouldn't get done, supporting an economy, and they've been turned in, you know, and demonized.
Yeah.
And so it's just so troubling, and it just hurts my heart, and the stupidity of it all. I mean, you know, you had Maggie on earlier talking about the numbers. You know, anybody that can do simple math should understand that if you are able to wave a magic wand and remove 5 to 11 million people from an economy that's already short of workers, it's not going to do great things for our economy, and certainly not for our rural economies where I'm from.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That's Hans Brighton Moser Jr. from Merrill, Wisconsin. We're going to talk about migrant labor here in the dairy farms. Now, Hans, I don't know if you know this, but people that listen to this show and know me certainly do. I worked on my neighbor's dairy farm when I was growing up. And my senior year in high school, man, I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning every single morning before going to school to help do the chores on the farm. And I got to ask you, and read the article, you milk your cows 3 times a day? We only did it 2x a day. What's the deal, man? What were we doing wrong, Hans? I never figured that one out.
Well, you know, when I was a kid growing up, we used to milk our cows 2x a day as well.
Yeah.
But the dairy industry, like so many things, has evolved, and we've come to discover that cows would just as well be milked 3 times a day as 2x a day, because they give a lot of milk, and so it's just healthier for the cows, and it makes the cows more productive as well. So that's why we milk them 3 times a day.
Wow, and that's a lot of work. The farm I was on had about 100, 125 milking cows, and of course some heifers and calves, and you know, beyond that, and one lucky bull when the breeders didn't work. But you got like 400 cows that you're milking 3 times a day. What kind of workforce does that take?
Well, so there are about a dozen people who work on my farm, and a lot of them milk cows, as you can imagine. We've got 2 people per shift, and every cow is milked every 8 hours. So right now my workforce, 10 out of the 12 people are from Mexico. They are foreign born folks. And I know this to be true of most of the farms, that I can think of off the top of my head. I mean, if they've got north of 200 cows, they have somebody working for them, if not darn near everybody who works for them, it has, you know, is coming from a different country. I happen to be sitting in Abbotsford right now. I'm from Merrill, but I'm in Abbotsford right now as I'm on my way to Menominee to pick up my kid from Stout. But go to Abbotsford, Wisconsin, everyone. And without foreign born folks, Abbotsford ceases to exist. Abbotsford is a very rural community. But it has a huge, huge labor force that works in the packing plant here. Mm-hmm. So we can talk about dairy directly, but we also talk about the packing, the meat packing industry. And like it or not, a lot of the folks that work in that type of job are also foreign born. So and while every employer, whether it's in hospitality, manufacturing, construction, dairy, vegetables, et cetera, all employers are obligated to ask for documentation so that they can have an I-9 form on hand. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and I don't know the statistics, but it's an open secret that a lot of people's documentation is questionable, you know. And so why not just face reality and say, okay, how can there be a legal path to maybe not citizenship, if that makes people all nervous, but certainly a path for legal work in this country.
Yeah, work permits.
Because we rely on these people to make the economy run. And if you remove these people from the economy, it is going to it's really going to hurt. And it's really going to hurt rural areas. I can't stress that enough. I was on the Lincoln County Board for 10 years, and I know what small rural counties face. I mean, we've been counting paper clips for years. Mm-hmm. You take away a big part of the population, it's going to have an impact on everything that goes on in these rural counties. So I just want people to understand how important this demographic of people is to our economy.
Hans, I often wondered about how the workaround is. As you mentioned, all these industries, construction, you know, meatpacking, manufacturing, dairy, farming, agriculture, lots of foreign-born workers, undocumented. But if they fill out a W-4 and an I-9, and that information, to your knowledge, is what it is. They ask it for, they gave it to, they fill out a Social Security number. As far as you're concerned, as far as the state of Wisconsin, that is legit. That's that person, and people just go on their way. Has there ever been any sort of audit of that, either by the federal government or by the state government, with regards to, you know, I-9 forms?
Well, again, my job as an employer or prospective employer, and everyone else's job, whether that's a restaurant or a hotel or a meatpacking plant, our job is to ask for documentation, assume that it is legitimate documentation, because if we don't assume that it's legitimate documentation, then aren't we racially profiling people, right?
Right.
So our job is not to, you know, that's the federal government's job to, you know, stick a flashlight up there. I'm not, you know, so my job is to have an I-9 form on file for all of my employees. And if Donald Trump or Uncle Sam or Johnny Law comes knocking, then okay, tell me what I've done wrong here. But my whole spiel here, Dom, is I think just more important than that, which is to say the honoring of work and the appreciation of people who are in this country doing hard work, and instead of using them as political, you know, cannon fodder, we should be appreciating people who are doing work that otherwise wouldn't get done. That's what sort of irritates me.
Oh, certainly. Well, and it's even, and Hans,
we're not honoring that.
Certainly not honoring that. In fact, I mean, they're dishonoring it by using it as a political tool to divide people and to make the others, as you mentioned, and to give someone, you know, someone to point their finger at. And that's been done very well by the Republicans. My rage on this is, along with the disrespect of the work, because I worked on the farm, Hans. That was the hardest work I ever did. Don't want to work that hard again the rest of my life. Is a lot of those folks that voted for Donald Trump, if that's the case, if they're the megas and the conservatives, voted for him to basically, if the, you know, large percentage of the workforce is undocumented, the I-9s are inaccurate, they come in and start pulling people out, they voted for the deportation of their own workforce. I mean, I don't understand how that is a rational decision, Hans. What do your conservative farmer friends say to you?
It's not a rational decision, and so I'll point out a couple things. Number one, Dairy farmers and rural folks are not unique in our ability to vote against our own self-interest.
Certainly.
Okay, right? I mean, you know, I mean, look at what about the union vote, right? I mean, there's been plenty of people who voted for folks that were not going to do them any good.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to share a little story with you real quick, if I may.
Please.
That speaks directly to your head scratching question, because I too scratched my head about that. How could so many rural people vote for Donald Trump, knowing what this was going to turn out to be? Right. A good guy that I know that provides a service to our farm once a month. He's an American. He votes Republican. He's very conservative, but he's a very, very good guy. I mean, we're talking volunteer firefighter. Him and his wife fostered children. He's just a hardworking guy, and then he farms on the side and so forth and so on. Well, he was at my farm here right after the election, and I was feeling pretty gloomy. And I made some smart-ass comment about how he and I were both going to be out of work pretty soon, because if Donald Trump rounds up everybody and sends them all home, I said, he and I won't have any work to do. And he said to me, he said, well, I wouldn't worry about that. I mean, you know, they're only going to deport the illegal folks. And right there, finally, a little light went on in my dim little skull that said, holy smokes, we've been having the wrong conversation. Because Kevin, the fellow that I was talking with, it never occurred to him that when he goes to different farms to do the tasks that he does on these farms, it never occurred to him that the people who he's working alongside might be here without proper documentation. And the reason why that never occurred to him is because the guys that he works with and the gals that he works with are good, hardworking, decent, honest, likable people.
Yeah.
And in his mind, all the illegal people are these scary television images that he's seen on on Fox News and on all the political ads and so forth. So he's disconnected from reality because he thinks all the illegals are all these people that are flooding across the border and doing all this crime. Those are the people who are going to get sent back.
And right. Hans, I got to pause right there. 1 second, man. Hold that thought. We got to take a quick break. Do you have time on the other side of a 2-minute break to stick with me for like another 8 minutes?
For sure. I want to finish my story.
Yeah, please do. Hold it right there, folks. This is the Dom Salve Show. That's our new friend, Hans Brighton Moser Jr. from Merrill, Wisconsin. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. This is Jess P.S., his producer here, wishing you all a very, very happy Thanksgiving. We are still revisiting that interview with farmer Hans Brighton Moser, picking right back up.
You were talking about your friend, your conservative, your good guy, conservative friend, Kevin, who comes around once a month, and we were concerned in your conversation, making a smart-ass comment, I think you said, Hans, that you're going to both be out of a job if Donald Trump gets his mass deportations in. And Kevin wasn't worried about that because his opinion was that only the illegals, quote-unquote, Hans, would be deported. Please continue, sir.
Yeah, and so there's my point to the story is that there's a misconception by plenty of rural folks who work on farms and in the meatpacking industry and in the local restaurants and so forth, that the folks that they work alongside, the foreign-born, you know, Mexicans, Hondurans, El Salvadorans, what have you, the folks that they work alongside, well, of course they must be here legally because they're such good people. These guys have been told that the illegals are all these folks that are committing crimes. So, you know, it's easy for us progressives to be crabby with our neighbors and say, well, my goodness, how could these folks, you know, vote this way? And how could they be such bigoted xenophobes and so forth? Well, you got to understand that they've been misled by the rhetoric and so forth on TV. Because when I said, Kevin, I said, you understand surely that a lot of the people that you work with, their documentation may not in fact be legit. And I swear to God, his face changed and it had not occurred to him. It simply had not occurred to him. And we both then, I believe, had an epiphany right there, because it didn't occur to him that a lot, if not most of the people that he works alongside for his job are in fact here illegally. And I had not, I had an epiphany because I just didn't realize that there was that level of misunderstanding. And I don't want to use the word ignorance, because I don't believe for a minute that he's an ignorant guy. Don't misunderstand me, but there's a, but, you know,
but if he used, but Hans, does he take that knowledge and use it? Because otherwise it's willful ignorance. You know what I'm saying? Once you become aware of that, Hans, isn't it upon them, is their responsibility to then perhaps adjust their mindset and their attitude with the new information that's come to light, man. You know what I mean?
For certain, yeah. I'm not letting anyone off the hook here.
Sure.
But what I am saying is that how do we move forward, right? Well, it's by having these types of conversations and enlightening our conservative brothers and sisters as to the reality of what's going on, because you know as well as I do, you know, there's a heck of a lot of misinformation coming over the, you know, I mean, we're talking decades of, you know, right-wing radio and all the rest of it. So, and when you have politicians who are willfully ignorant and who are willing to, you know, make as much hay with this type of stuff as they possibly can, that's the part that's disgusting. I can forgive, you know, the Kevins of the world to a certain extent, but I have a real hard time forgiving politicians who will, you know, create advertisements around, you know, this criminality and all this type of stuff, and choose to ignore facts just to get votes. I mean, that's, you know, you know, I'm sure you're rolling your eyes there at my outrage, because I mean, how naive am I? This has been going on for years, but it's still bothersome, and that's why I appreciate the opportunity to come on and you know, just sort of try and be a voice for people who don't have a political voice in this country.
Well, it's political whether you're involved in it or not. Hans Brighton Moser Jr. from Merrill. Hans, you know, in As I look at this, and if we can't, you know, convince people before the election, and which of course is too late now, if and when, you know, the mass deportation starts, then people are going to know. The article that you are mentioned in, Hans, talked about the milk prices being doubled if this were to happen. That seems to me inflationary to me, Hans. If you had to, if I may ask, what does a farmhand get paid, a foreign-born farmhand? And if that job were to be gone and you had to hire, say, your son who you're picking up, you know, someone else, how much more would your payroll increase?
It wouldn't increase. I would have to quit farming. There's nobody out there for me to hire. It's not a matter of me or any other dairy farm or packing plant paying folks less than they could otherwise get away with. It's simply that there are no other people out there. My payroll, depending on the position on my farm, starts at $13, and I've got one guy that with benefits and so forth makes north of $30 an hour. So it kind of runs the gamut depending on how long they've been there and what they do and so forth. And I think you'll find that throughout the, you know, the multiple industries that foreign-born people, you know, the jobs that they occupy. But it's not a matter of pay. This is what people don't understand. If this came to pass, all right, and this was possible, logistically possible, to round up and get rid of this many people. For starters, I don't know how you do that, and that's what the only thing that gives me some hope, is that I can't imagine how, you know, again, in an economy that doesn't have enough people, you're going to hire an army of bureaucrats, presumably, to collect all these other folks that are actually doing real work. And you're going to chase them out of the country.
Yeah.
My farm stops working.
We're going to run out of time. I guess we'd be grilling out, man. Hans Brighton Moser Jr. from Merrill, Wisconsin, thank you so much for joining, man. I appreciate it. Please come back around sometime real soon.
And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for joining us on this Thanksgiving. I hope you had a chance to really dig into some gratitude and spend time with your loved ones. Catch me guest hosting tomorrow for the Dom Salvia Show for a very special edition. Oops, all producers.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.